in your prayers this morning. Thank the Lord for opportunity to be here, and very grateful for each one of you that's made it. Would like to continue the subject that we have started out quite a while ago now about two works of grace. I believe in it. I trust I've been convincing on that I believe it. Last Sunday we spent time on the portion of the second work that's a cleansing, and then last Sunday night we talked about the infilling, or the what it means to be filled with that Holy Spirit, the second work of grace. In my line of work, you can talk about, and maybe many of you in your line of work, you could talk about the theory behind how things work. The textbook part of it. If you're talking about electrical circuits, you can talk about electrons and electron flow and hole flow and current flow and all this kind of stuff. And you can just get really deep into understanding electricity. But when it comes down to finding the problem in an application, and there's a moisture intrusion, and there's some kind of little science fair looking experiment going on your battery cable or some other place, sometimes it's pretty hard sometimes to explain with the book just exactly how it does things like that. I don't want to get off on a rabbit trail this morning, but I remember one time I was checking a low voltage circuit on a car, and I was having real trouble sorting out the problem, and come to find out, I realized that the harness had some moisture in it, what I thought was moisture, and I could put my voltmeter into that moisture area, and there was voltage in it. And then come to find out, brake fluid had leaked into the wiring harness, and brake fluid will kind of act like a battery. I'm just telling you because I've been there. It's not because I can explain it. That's the real world, okay? We discover things along the way that's like, I don't know how this fits in the book anywhere. So I'd like to talk this morning with the help of the Lord about everyday life with the second work of grace. So, I said earlier at another setting that when we try to describe salvation, the first work of grace, we can define it from different perspectives. Like, there has to be belief. We all have to agree that you have to believe to be able to be saved. We all have to agree that you have to confess. You have to repent. There's a part of restitution. There's a part of accepting. There's just all different facets. There's a part about being born again, being a new creature. I think being born again and the whole new creature element includes most likely both works of grace. All right? So we start talking about the second work of grace. And we can talk about it from different angles. So this morning I'd like to talk about it from the angle of what it means to get the experience, and then the growth that happens in our life, spiritual growth. Okay? So most of us here are familiar with the story of the Israelites. The Israelites I'm going to try to give you a real fast refresher on this. The land of Israel today, where the nation Israel is today, by and large, is the area that was promised to the Israelites of the Old Testament in the Old Testament. What, did I say that right? Okay. So, the Israelites of the Old Testament were descendants of Abraham. Abraham was a man that God spoke to and said, I want you to go to a land that I'll give you and give your descendants. And the man whose name became Israel was his grandson. Abraham had a son named Isaac. Isaac had two sons, Jacob and Esau, or Esau and Jacob. And Jacob, after he done spiritual battle with an angel, his name was changed to Israel. So that's how we got Israelites. Okay? So an Israelite, if we read the book of Genesis in the Old Testament, it starts with the story of creation and it ends with the death of Moses. And in that process, the Israelite nation became a nation, but it ultimately became a nation that was enslaved in Egypt. Okay? Abraham came to the land of Canaan. His grandson Isaac, his grandson Israel, Jacob becoming Israel, had 12 sons, and in the course of time, those sons and their families, they were increasing in number, just like God promised Abraham that they would. And time and chance happened to them. They got into a drought, and one of his sons had been, there was conflict, sibling rivalry, and we could go into a lot of stuff, but one of these sons' names was Joseph. And Joseph was sold into bondage or into slavery to some people called Ishmaelites. And he was taken to Egypt. One thing led to something else. And Joseph ended up being a ruler in Egypt. Came from a slave to being a ruler. And the other brothers came down there and realized through Joseph's understanding of a dream that the Pharaoh had, that the Israelites would be subjected to the same famine for 7 years that the Egyptians would. And so Joseph's advice was, load up your families and come down to Egypt. We've got plenty of corn saved up. The Pharaoh was so ecstatic about Joseph's managing abilities and that God had showed him the interpretation of the dream. He said, give your family the best land. And they moved into a place called Goshen in Egypt. I believe it was a fertile place. And one thing led to something else, and they ultimately became a nation of 600,000 men plus the women and the children. And that's the number that were given when they left Egypt. But by the time they got ready to leave Egypt, times had changed. Times have changed in our land from the time that I was a young person until now. From the time of our forefathers that wrote our Constitution till now, there's been many, many changes. And I have to think that they would be appalled at the changes that's happened. You know, I believe Joseph would have been appalled at the changes that happened to his descendants there in the land of Egypt. So at the time that they left Egypt, it was a time that the Israelites were in bondage. They were making bricks, and they were doing all kinds of other menial slave tasks. They had, for generations, they had been slaves. They were not trained in combat. They weren't trained to be soldiers. They weren't trained to be leaders. They were just trained to be a yes sir, yes ma'am. I'll just do what they're told. That's what they'd been for generations. So there was a slave mentality that was in there, and when Moses came along to be their deliverer, you remember the story of Moses, and I won't go into that, but they left Egypt, and Egypt was a type of sin. You know what I mean by type? A type is something that represents something that's in the New Testament. And we're really all through time. But Egypt and the slavery and the bondage they were in, when they became delivered from Egypt and came out of Egypt and crossed that Red Sea on dry land, and they totally escaped from the Lord, he destroyed the Egyptians in that Red Sea. You remember that story. They tried to follow them, and the Lord drowned them all. Whether it was 6 inches or 60 feet of water, it don't matter. The Lord got the job done. And so when they got on the other side of the Red Sea, they realized they were totally free from the bondage of Egypt. When we come to the Lord and experience the first work of grace, we recognize that we transition from a time of being in bondage to sin to being free from that bondage. I don't have to continue to have those sinful practices in my life. And the Lord promises, we talked about this early on, the Lord has promised us that He don't remember them. You're going to have to commit a new sin for Him to hold it against you. He don't remember the old ones. He'll separate them as far as the east is from the west from us. We do not have to answer for the guilt of the past. All right? That's totally delivered from that power. The Israelites were totally delivered from Egypt. So I'll tell you that they left Egypt, and they was Moses asked, let's put it that way. Moses asked Pharaoh originally, can I go 3 days' journey into the wilderness to worship God? He wanted, it was about a 3-day journey, or maybe a little more, to the land of Canaan. Maybe it was, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong on that. But it wasn't that far. And when they got to a place, the Lord taught them some things there in that Exodus part. That's where the name Exodus comes from, for the second book of Moses that we have in the Bible. It's talking about their journey. And they came to a place called Kadesh Barnea. And they sent spies into the land. And the spies came back and said, oh, this land is incredible. They brought a cluster of grapes, it says, and two men carried it on a pole. They said, oh, it flows with milk and honey. Just everything good that you can imagine is over there. But there's a problem. There's giants over there. And because their news media that they had promoted the giants and diminished the grapes and the honey and the milk and all the good things, the people became discouraged, and they said, we won't go over. We're afraid of those giants. So they didn't go in. That was their opportunity. And they lost some of the victory they had. They still weren't in Egypt. They weren't in the old sins, but they had not accepted the plan that God had for them. Okay? So at that point, we could say they lost some spiritual ground, using this for a type. And while the Israelites left that place, they ended up, because of their rejection of God's plan, they ended up wandering 40 years in a short, what could have been a short-term journey to the Canaan land. They wandered 40 years until all of those that was 20 years old and older had time to die. He just let them die off a little bit at a time. Took them 40 years for all those that said, "We won't go," to die off. And in the meantime, Joshua became the leader of the Israelites. And I'd like to turn to the book of Joshua, and I want us to notice that's at the end of the five books of Moses. The next book in the Bible is Joshua. If we turn to Joshua in the third chapter, we're going to read here about them crossing over into the Canaan land. Now, crossing into the Canaan land, because the Israelites in the wilderness, there were some victories, there were some things the Lord blessed them with, or they wouldn't have survived. He provided for them. The Lord is intent on providing spiritual food for you and for me. But if we wander around in the wilderness, it's our own fault. They had an up and down, sometimes victorious, sometimes backslidden experience with God. And many times the enemy tricks us into not pursuing, because that's one of the things we've talked about, is we can't be saved, we can't receive the first work of grace, or part of the first work of grace is the Lord drawing us to Him and convicting us of our sins. But the second work of grace is something that we have an obligation to pursue. The disciples, Jesus told them, you got to tarry in Jerusalem until you be endued with power. They had a choice to make. Do we tarry in Jerusalem or do we go back to fishing? You know what happened after the crucifixion? Peter said, I go a-fishing. And Jesus came and found him. You remember that? And Peter had a choice here. He could have went fishing again, but he made a choice to tarry in Jerusalem. We have to tarry in the presence of the Lord. That's our spiritual Jerusalem. And ask God to be for this second work of grace. Okay? So at the time that Joshua assumed the leadership, the children of Israel are fixing to go into Canaan. Moses is gone. All of the other generation is gone. There was two men that went into the Canaan land that were alive when the spies went into the land. You remember their names? Joshua and Caleb. These two men were up in years by now, but they were two of the spies that came back, and their testimony was, we're well able to take this land. The Lord will help us overcome it. And the Lord blessed them, and they said, you can go, but everybody else is going to have to die wandering around in the wilderness. I want to believe. I do believe that there's a second work of grace. In the second work of grace, many times the type of it is crossing into Canaan land, inheriting the promised land. You want to have a life of victory? I want to have a life of victory. I want to be able to defeat the enemy and enjoy God's blessings. You know, God wants to bless us. But He wants us to pursue those blessings. So notice what happened in the third chapter of Joshua. We're going to start reading. Maybe in the second verse. And it came to pass after 3 days that the officers went through the host. This is would be like the big group of people that didn't have internet to post something, so they had people to go through the people, officers to go through the host. And they commanded the people, saying, when you see the Ark of the Covenant, now this is something that had been given to them while they wandered around in the Egypt, or in the wilderness, While they were wandering around in the wilderness, the Lord blessed them and gave them, or helped them to build this Ark of the Covenant, and they put some things in it. They put in Aaron's rod, they put in some a container of manna, and it was something that they came and came around and worshiped God, okay? At this point, he says, when you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God and the priests, the Levites bearing it, then shall you remove from your place and go after it. That's the signal for you to start moving, and we're going to cross into Canaan land. Yet there shall be a space between you and it, about 2,000 cubits. How far is that? It's about 3,500 feet, which is a little over half a mile. Don't get right up there close to it. What's the benefit of that? Besides, the Lord commanded them, don't come close to it and don't touch it. The benefit was, if it's a half a mile out in front of you, you can see exactly where it's going. Everybody can. You know, many times we can lose our way by not having a vision of where the Lord's taking us. All right. So he said, let it be out there about 2,000 cubits by measure. Come not near unto it, that you may know the way by which ye must go, for ye have not passed this way heretofore. You've never been here. You have never experienced, in our world today, you have never experienced the second work of grace yet, but you're fixing to. And Joshua said unto the people, sanctify yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. That means clean up your act. Take care of the little business that you've been procrastinating on. The things of maybe do the housekeeping and get your stuff ready so you can gather it up quickly to move. And apologize for the things you need to apologize for. And you make sure you cross all your T's and dot all your I's. Have you ever noticed that when you're in a hurry trying to write something down or send a text or something, you miss letters and you forget to do all those little I do. And you go back and read it and say, well, this don't even make sense. You know, I got to put some clarification in here. That's what he's telling them to do. Get ready so that you're prepared to take action. Verse 6 says, and Joshua spake unto the priest, saying, take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass over before the people. And they took up the Ark of the Covenant and went before the people. And the Lord said unto Joshua, this day will I begin to magnify thee in the sight of Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. And thou shalt command the priests that bear the Ark of the Covenant, saying, when ye are come to the brink of the waters of Jordan, you shall stand still in Jordan. That means when you get there and the water is divided, by faith, they're telling them this. When the water's divided, I want you to stand still in Jordan. All right? And Joshua said unto the children of Israel, come hither and hear the words of the Lord your God. And Joshua said, hereby ye shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will without fail drive out from before you the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Hivites and the Perizzites and the Girgashites and the Amorites and the Jebusites. Now I want to stop and ask us a question. How many of us here have specific things that you would like to have victory over in your spirit? You got anything? There's victories I want to gain. More victories I want to gain. But it would be foolish for us to profess Christianity and not want to have victory. Not want to be victorious. I mean, that's counterintuitive. It's not what we're in this for. I'm in this because I want to be a better person. I want to have a peace about me that passes the understanding of the common man. He says here, behold, that's what he's doing when he's naming out all these ites of the land. That's the places they're going to get victory over. He says, behold, the ark of the covenant of the Lord of all the earth passeth over before you into Jordan. Now therefore, take you 12 men out of the tribes of Israel, out of every tribe of a man. And it shall come to pass, as soon as the soles of the feet of the priests that bear the ark of the Lord of all the earth shall rest in the waters of Jordan, and that the waters of Jordan shall be cut off from the waters that come down from above, and they shall stand upon and heap. And it come to pass, when the people removed from their tents to pass over Jordan, and the priests bearing the ark of the covenant before the people, and as they bear the ark were come to Jordan, and the feet of the priests that bear the ark were dipped in the brim of the water, for Jordan overfloweth all his banks all the time of harvest. Now the important part here is that some say that the Jordan River at some times is so small that you could have just kind of waded through it. But at this time, it was outside of its banks. It was at flood stage, if you will. Now the creek that's by my house, you could wade through it in most places, as long as you didn't slip on a rock, and be just fine. But I'm going to tell you, I saw the creek high enough that it was not only over the road, but it was over the banister on the bridge. I couldn't see the bridge. Now, today, this afternoon, y'all want to wade across my creek? Come on out. I know, I'm very confident that we can wade across the creek. But when the water is up above the banister on the bridge, the railing, now that's a different story. There's stuff going down that creek, like logs and trees and stuff like that, that got flushed out of the woods. I'm going to say, y'all need to go around. That's the setting. The Jordan was out of its banks. And the priest that was holding the ark, this thing that's so precious and so valuable, the Lord told the people, don't get too close to it because you might not survive. And so they came down there and they put their, what did they say? It said they put their feet in the brim of the water, right there in the edge. Now we're fixing to have a catastrophe. There are people that want to deny the second work of grace. Say it's not possible. I want to tell you, they had a definite experience that day. It says that the waters which came down from above, this is verse 16, stood and rose up upon a heap very far from the city of Adam, that is beside Zaratan, and those that came down toward the sea of the plain, even the salt sea, failed and were cut off, and the people passed over right against Jericho. So right in the vicinity of Jericho, they walked across the riverbed. And I don't know how big this heap was, but I think it was significant. And they walked across. All the people. 600,000 men plus the women and the children. I don't know the exact number. It was a lot of people walked across. And the priests that bear the ark of the covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the midst of Jordan, and all the Israelites passed over on dry ground until all the people were passed clean over Jordan. Now, while they were doing that, you remember those 12 men that were selected? They were to pick up a stone out of the middle of the riverbed and carry it out and make a pile. So when other people came, later generations said, what's that pile of stones for? They could say, that's when the Lord delivered us. That's when the Lord brought us across Jordan. Now, the thing I want us to get a hold of this morning is the promise of the victories that the Lord had for them in the Canaan land. So it was a definite experience. I don't believe the second work of grace, and this is a statement, I don't believe the second work of grace is something that we just get better as we go along, that we gradually work into it. I believe it's a definite experience that we come and ask the Lord for. It's a cleansing that we ask Him to do in our minds and in our hearts. It's an infilling that happens initially. All right? In Exodus chapter 23 and verse 27, we'll go back a little bit and read a promise that the Lord gave them about conquering Canaan land. So let's go back to Exodus chapter 23 and begin reading in verse 27. He says here, I will send my fear before thee and will destroy all the people to whom thou shalt come. And I will make all thine enemies turn their backs unto thee. And I will send hornets before thee, which shall drive out the Hivite, the Canaanite, and the Hittite from before thee. I will not drive them out from before thee in 1 year, lest the land become desolate and the beasts of the field multiply against thee. By little and little I will drive them out from before thee until thou be increased and inherit the land. All right? Verse 31. And I will set thy bounds from the Red Sea unto the Sea of the Philistines, from the desert unto the river, for I will deliver the inhabitants of the land into your hand, and thou shalt drive them out from before thee. So this is a promise of victory, a promise of them being able to inherit. Remember, in the book of Exodus, we're reading about their journey coming out of Egypt, or the bondage, and going to the Canaan land. And in the Joshua here is when they've actually crossed the Jordan, going into the Canaan land. Inheriting the Canaan land was not like winning the lottery. It is a gift, but it wasn't a gift like that, like the lottery, okay? So, when my boys were all at home, this has been a long time ago now, a very long time ago, the older two boys were probably 10, 12, maybe 13 years old. I can't remember in that age bracket. Both of them had something that they really wanted for Christmas. And it was expensive. And I really wanted to give it to them. I wanted them to be able to open the box and it be what they really wanted. So I hatched up a plan. I bought it for them, and I wrapped it up. Each one of them had something that was, and we had decided we will spend this much money on their Christmas present. So I handed them the box, and I told them, each one of them, before you open it, you got to give me this much money. And it was the amount that I didn't feel like was what I could spend on their Christmas present. And they looked at me kind of funny. And I promised them, I said, it's something you really want. And they went and got their wallets, and they gave me the money. And they opened it, and they were very excited that I'd actually ordered it for them. And they were willing. They never asked about getting their money back. Okay? The second work of grace is a gift. But if you don't put something into it, you'll never get it. All right? I'll make that real clear. When the people went across the Jordan, there wasn't a man in the crowd that could have made that water stop. There wasn't nobody that could have made a bridge that would have allowed 600,000 people to cross it would have been an amazing engineering feat to do that. But the Lord was able, you think about this, you're walking up to the river, and when they put their foot in the water, the Lord caused the water to stand in a heap. And they walked across on dry land, because it said the priest stood in the middle of the river on dry land. Now, only God could do that. But if they hadn't put their foot in the water, they wouldn't have crossed. If they hadn't been willing to follow the ark, they wouldn't have got there. We will not experience the second work of grace unless you want it, unless you pursue it. It's a definite experience. That day went down, it's recorded in the Bible, but that went down in their memory, and they never forgot that, the people that crossed that. And they put a pile of stones there so that others could be reminded of that day as well. But the promise of inheriting the Canaan land was one of growth. The Lord promised them back there in Exodus, it's going to be little by little that I'm going to drive out the Ites before thee. I'd like to turn to Joshua now, the first chapter, back up. And notice a promise here that he says. For the sake of time, I won't read it all, but in verse 3, it says, every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses. Every place that you put the foot down, the Lord will give it to you. Now, when you remember anything special about 1907 in our United States? I believe I got the right year. Wasn't that the year that Oklahoma became a state? Well, 1907, was that the year of the land run? That's the one I want us to think about. So, you remember how that was supposed to work? There was probably some things that didn't work like this, but the way it was supposed to work was you were supposed to be outside of the state line, and wherever you went in, you could claim 160 acres. And you had to start making improvements. And whoever got there first, I can only imagine the chaos that could have happened in that kind of thing. There's a lot of stuff that could go into this story. But now, the promise from God that everywhere they put the foot, He would give it to them, was not one that all the improvements were made. Now, they inherited cities that they didn't build. They inherited cultivated lands. But I'm going to tell you, they had to put some skin in the game. And you're going to have to, too. This sounds good, doesn't it? And what I want to know is, how did it work out? Because that's where we live, isn't it? We live in the everyday world. Sometimes I wake up in the morning and I didn't rest good the night before. And sometimes things don't go well on the job. Sometimes our customers come back and say, I don't like what you did. And that's the real world that we face. In Joshua, the 6th chapter, a couple verses there, we find that when they crossed, you remember when we was reading there, when they crossed the Jordan, it says it was near Jericho. They was right there close to Jericho. And the Lord gave them special instructions on how to conquer Jericho. Very unconventional warfare. They were to march around the city once a day for 6 days. And on the 7th day, this was everybody. The whole crowd walked around I don't, either it was a really big place or they met each other on the way back around. And on the seventh day, they were to march around it seven times. It was a long day. They marched around it seven times. At the end of the seventh time around, they were to blow the trumpet. The priests were to blow trumpets, and they were to shout. The whole crowd was to shout. That'd been quite a shout, wasn't it? And when they did, what happened to the city? The walls collapsed. Let's read that. Verse 20, chapter 6. It says, so the people shouted when the priests blew with the trumpets, and it came to pass when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, and the people shouted with a great shout, that the wall fell down flat, so that the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city. And they utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, young and old, ox and sheep and ass, with the edge of the sword. Right there, they were. I think they were wrapped plumb around the city. You know, the tail of it was meeting the head of it. They're just like a just totally encompassed that city. I know that by the seventh time around, the people inside were a nervous wreck. The Lord gave them that city. My, everywhere we put our foot, the Lord's given us this land. All we got to do is march around. How many other cities did they take by marching around? None. You know, a lot of times, the initial experience of the second work of grace, we're going to find a level of victory in something that we've struggled with in the past. And it's like, Lord, I didn't know it was going to be so good. And then, what happened next? I'd like to turn to the seventh chapter. I'd like to bear with us just a few more minutes. I'd like to begin reading in the second verse. So they're feeling pretty good about conquering this Canaan land. They're 1-0, you might say. They've won conflict and they're victors. Here in verse 2, the 7th chapter, it says, and Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is beside Bethaven on the east side of Bethel, and spake unto them, saying, go up and view the country. And the men went up and viewed Ai. And they returned to Joshua and said unto him, let not all the people go up, but let about 2,000 or 3,000 men go up and smite Ai, and make not all the people to labor thither, for they are but few. What stands out to you in those two verses? They trusted in themselves. They went and assessed the enemy and said, my, we could wade this stream by ourselves. We don't need to bother everybody. This is just Ai. This is not Jericho. This is just a little place. Just send a few of us over there and we'll take this place out. Where in those two verses did they seek the Lord? They didn't. If they had sought the Lord, do you think the Lord might have given them some different instructions? Let's read a little bit more. verse 4. So there went up thither of the people about 3,000 men, and they fled before the men of Ai. Hold on. Who was doing the fleeing? The Israelites were fleeing. And the men of Ai smote of them about 36 men, for they chased them from before the gate even into Shibrim, and smote them in the going down. And there, wherefore the hearts of the people melted and became as water. Defeat. Did you know we can experience a level of defeat after we have experienced a second work of grace? How many of us are going to keep on being human until the Lord takes us out of here? We're all going to be human. And you can assess something and feel like you can take it by yourself. And you can mess up, just like the Israelites did. And Joshua rent his clothes and fell to the earth upon his face before the ark of the Lord. He should have done that first, shouldn't he? But he did that after he experienced defeat. Does this sound like the real world? Like you and I, where we live? We'll make a decision? Surely, I know how the Lord works. This is what we ought to do to take care of this. He says he rent his clothes and fell on his face before the ark of the Lord until the eventide and the elders of Israel and put dust upon their heads. And Joshua said, "Alas, O Lord God, wherefore hast thou at all brought this people over to Jordan to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us? Would to God we had been content and dwelt on the other side of Jordan." You think you're going to face some battles even after you've experienced the infilling of the Holy Spirit? Yes. Yes, you will. That's where the rubber meets the road. That's everyday life. We're going to have some battles. We're going to have some struggles. And we might have some battles that we don't win initially. And when they step back and the Lord was able to tell them why they lost, what did they do then? They fixed it. You know, when we approach something and we don't come out victorious, and we come back and we tarry before the Lord and say, "Lord, what are we doing wrong?" The Lord will show you what's going on. And we have an opportunity to fix it. When they fixed it, they went again. And what happened to Ai the second time? They was able to conquer the land. You will too. The second work of grace is something that gives us power. Maybe, I trust you don't get tired of me. But I think we better stop for tonight, for this morning. They lost at Ai because they made a decision in their own power. They had a problem that they needed to address. Did you know if they would have sought the Lord before they went to Ai the first time, I believe the Lord, He wouldn't have let them go down there and lose. He would have said, "You got something you need to fix before you go down there. You know, you got a little," He may tell us, "You got a little attitude about this. You got a little disposition that needs adjustment. You need to make a little bit more consecration. You need to have a little more love. You need to have a little more of my spirit manifest in your life before you approach that." Folks, I want you to know that as I go along through life, I find new cities that I need to conquer. I don't believe the Israelites knew how many cities there were to conquer. You remember the Lord didn't promise them that He would just clear it all out and they could just walk in and take over. He didn't promise them that. But as they came to it, every place they took was just like crossing the Jordan. Every place they took was one that the Lord gave them when they came to it. You can't get enough victory for being 60 when you're 49. All right? You can't get enough victory when you're a teenager to be middle-aged with children. When you get middle-aged with children, the Lord will help you conquer that city too. And when you get 60, the Lord will help you have enough victory to conquer that one. But don't expect to have enough victory and enough power to be whatever you know, to make it to the end. You know when I'm going to have the victory to be able to exit this life? We call it dying. It's when I get there. I can say I believe the Lord will see me through. And I do. I believe He'll see me through. I believe He'll see you through. But when I get down right to it, I'm going to have a city that I'm going to have to conquer. I might be marching around it. And I might be setting ambushes up. I don't know what the Lord's going to have us do. But I believe the Lord will help us when every time we come to something that needs to be conquered in our life, the Lord will help us. I believe the Lord will help you. You pray for me. I want to be victorious. I have a city right now that I'm working on. I want the Lord to give me a victory that I haven't had in the past. And I want to be able to rise above it. And I want you to have victory in your hearts and in your life. Because we don't know what life will bring us. We don't know what we may face before we get out of here. But I know that God is able with His power and His authority. He's there to help you. And He'll give us the victory when we put our foot in the water. When we're willing to say, I want to conquer this by the grace of God. You pray for me.